thumb out, clench fist, swing. Brian stumbles from the force of it. Clutching his jaw, he waves his phone at me.
It's still recording, stupid! You want assault and battery on the headlines, too? Assault this!
And with a wild yell, I charge at him. Brian spins around and dashes toward the revolving doors. I slam into the same wedge with him, like two sardines in a tin can, pulling at his obnoxious Knox ears.
Ow, ow, ow! Hands off!
He cries.
Those were expensive!
We were friends! I manage to rip off one ear before he pushes the revolving door far enough to escape into the lobby.
You just said you wanted to be friends! Yeah, until you turned out to be a better-than-everyone-else asshole!
He shouts over his shoulder. Circling an expensive-looking couch. The upholstery is really nice, but screw it. I climb over the cushions. He thought I'd go around and grab him by that stupid nonsensical cape. I always said the Knox King didn't need a cape.
And you sold me out. You were jealous.
Seriously, man? He whirls behind another chair and shoves it at me.
Your head's so far up your dad's ass, it's unbelievable.
I catch the chair before it slams into my crotch. Take that back.
Your daddy's little boy, doing everything he wants. He manufactured you, you know that?
He grabs a handful of magazines and throws them at me. I duck as a Teen Vogue with me on the cover sails over my head.
I said, take it back. What, not proud of being his little
I charge at him again. He cuts through a family of four and shoves their luggage cart between us. I grab the other side.
So you took a picture of me face-planting into a dock and sold it? That really made everything better.
I try to jerk the cart away, but he holds fast.
Why'd you do it?
His dark purple makeup begins to flake off as his face scrunches in anger.
Why don't you ask your father?
Mark's got nothing to do with it.
He planted the pictures,
Brian roars. I gape.
Never thought of that, huh?
He sneers.
Don't you think the timing was a little too good? Just wrapped up the second season of Seaside? You'd auditioned for Carmendor, and people kinda knew who you were.
Frack you.
But they didn't really know you. No one cared outside of your sea costs or whatever the hell they're called.
He's lying. I know he is. But his words begin to constrict my throat, making it harder to breathe.
I took them as a joke, something to give you shit about later. But then Mark confiscated them, told me they could get me paid.
Brian says,
and he was right. One big story and you were on the map. You were everywhere.
It was hell.
It was business, man,
Brian says.
I thought you'd get over it eventually.
And I thought I could trust my best friend. The dad of the family whose cart we've commandeered tentatively reaches for their luggage, glancing between us as if we're crazy monsters. At the check-in desk, the clerk is already on the phone, probably with security. I can see the headline now. Darian fights with sleazy paparazzo and murders his ass.
Sure, Brian says. Blame me for all this. Can't stomach to blame yourself, can you?
I spin the cart away from tourist dad and attack with a Conan the Barbarian cry of rage. Brian retreats through the ballroom doors, disappearing into the dark mist of the dance party. He skids to a stop at the balustrade leading down to the dance floor and glances back.
Oh, shit!
But I've already taken a flying leap. My shoulder slams into his chest, and we tumble over the railing like King Kong off the Empire State Building. The 10-foot drop takes a lot longer than I expect. Long enough for me to regret this entire decision. Well, At least I'm insured. We crash onto the floor with enough force to knock the breath out of me. The DJ scratches a pokey rap remix to a halt. Avengers and Night Elves and Jedi circle us. I roll onto my back, groaning. I don't think I've broken any bones, but I can't tell. It feels like I've cracked absolutely everything. Beside me, Brian rolls over too, and we stare up at the ceiling. It's actually a pretty nice ceiling. Golden chromed, like the rest of the hotel. Fancy. I must have hit my head harder than I thought. You know what? I sit up unsteadily. I've been bruised and beaten up today, more times than I ever was on set. I knew I wanted to stay away from this con for a reason. We could have been friends, but it never would have worked. And not because I'm famous. Because you're a dick, Brian. You stalked me. You yelled at me in front of my fans. You stole my freaking phone. Somewhere in the back of the ballroom, I hear Gail yelling at people to get out of her way. She's already calling our insurer to make sure my abs are covered for battle wounds. Brian inhales a long, shuddery breath. Maybe, he glances over. But I'm telling... ow! The truth. He slowly gets to his feet. His lip is bloody from where I nailed him. He stretches out a hand, and I take it, painfully standing up. Okay, so I might have sprained something or bruised something very, very bad. He controls you, man. And you were going to let him take that girl away, too. Gail finally finds her way to us and takes me by the face. Dear, are you okay? Are you hurt? How many fingers am I holding up? 3, I reply, realizing that Brian is no longer there. I whirl around, looking for him, but all I see is a black cape as he slips between 2 orcs and disappears. Gail yanks my face toward her again, inspecting my nose, then my lips, and muttering to herself in her mother hen way about how much Mark is going to chew us out this time. I always get into the worst trouble with you, Dare. We're heading back to L.A., and I'm locking you in your apartment until the premiere. That's a promise. Actually, I remember the words on the side of the food truck that Elle left in. The Magic Pumpkin. Charleston's best vegan food truck. It's all beginning to make sense now. The chimichangas. The jokes. She was already so close. Brian's words echo like warning bells in my head. You were gonna let him take that girl away, too. I should have told her the truth in the beginning. I shouldn't have been so scared of the consequences, because I'll live through them, whatever they are. I just want to be real, for once, without a mask, unscripted, unknown. I would rather live my life knowing that Elle hates me than live as fake Carmendor in her head. We're going to take a nice long vacation. It's going to be perfect. No. I hold my ribs, trying not to grimace. I think I definitely bruised them. I need to talk to my dad first. The phone rings once, twice, before Mark picks up. I check my watch. 12:31 a.m. Way early out on the West Coast. He should still be up partying. Or going to some event sponsored by this film studio or that production company. Networking, he says. I remember the years he did nothing but network, night after night. My entire childhood was filled with it. I had more babysitters than I could name. And then, one weekend, long after the divorce, he got me that toothpaste commercial gig. And 3 months later, an audition for this OC-esque TV series called Seaside Cove. Then, the headlines happened. I rubbed the scar on my chin absently. I don't know how much I believe Brian, but I don't know whether I want to believe Mark either. I can't remember much from those weeks in the tabloids. It was a whirlwind of paparazzi and press and headlines. And it never really died down afterward. There was my life before the headlines, and after. I wonder, in L's possible universe, who I would become without them. Maybe in that universe I'd still have a father. And maybe I wouldn't have blamed Brian. Maybe I'd be no one at all. "Hello?" Mark grumbles. "Hey, old man," I say brightly.
"Darian? What are you... What time is it?"
I hear him shuffle around, and then he groans.
"Darian, it's late over there. Aren't you supposed to be catching a flight?"
"Supposed to," I say. "It's probably taking off. I don't know." There's an edge to his voice.
"You don't know?"
I swallow the knot in my throat and concentrate on my polished leather boots. They're Carmendor's boots, actually. I haven't changed out of them yet. I'm fooling myself into thinking that maybe if I'm dressed like a hero, I can still act like one, holding on to the last ragged shred of courage left in me. Lonnie, sitting in a cushy hotel room armchair, quietly sips a glass of sparkling water. Gail, in the chair beside him, scrolls through her phone. They're both listening, and I don't care. When I asked if they could stay in the room when I called Mark, they agreed without hesitation. It's a comfort. I guess because they're the closest thing I have to friends. Or parents.
"How do you not know? You are getting on that plane. You are coming home. Do you realize how much money those tickets are..."
"Did you leak those photos?" I blurt out.
"The ones Brian took.
From the yacht?" Gail looks up from her phone, her face pale with surprise. Mark stays quiet for a long moment.
"I realized that you needed to pick your friends carefully,"
he replies slowly, choosing his words carefully. "Just like he wants to pick my friends, my career, my girlfriends, and everything else, my entire life.
When I saw he had those photos, I had to do something.
So I did. That way we stayed ahead of the news." I sink onto the edge of the bed and stare at the beige carpet. "So you sacrificed my pride and privacy for a little fame.
Those headlines got you Carmendor, Darian."
"They got me Carmendor." The words feel like a knife twisting in my gut. I remember the weeks after the headlines broke, staying in my apartment, locking the doors, feeling the walls closing in around me. Then outside, wearing sunglasses and a hat everywhere, trying not to scroll through the headlines, but reading them anyway. Feeling the shame solidify inside me, becoming hard, forming a wall. "Were you ever going to tell me?"
"Darian, it's complete."
"Were you?"
"Darian, I wanted what was in your best interest."
"And the pictures from the shoot? Was that you too? Or did Brian leak those on his own?"
"Don't be naive. All leaks are fake."
Mark scoffs. I can practically see him drawing the air quotes as he says the word leaks. "Brian was hard up for cash, so I found him a PA gig on set. Told him to keep his head down and maybe snap a few things. Spy on your phone, if he could get it."
"You lied to me. You let me get slandered. Again. For what?
A few minutes of fame?"
"To keep you relevant," my father says.
"Congrats," I reply bitterly. "It worked." There's a long pause.
"I know you probably hate me," Mark says. "You have every right to, but I'm not the bad guy here, I swear. I never wanted to be. The leaks, the attention, you and Jess, we're better because of it, yeah? It worked out perfectly. We survived."
"I guess," I say. He's right. I did survive. The film's in the can, and I'm going to be a star. But L. Losing L. That's the aftermath. Now, Mark continues, I'm going to book you another flight. You've got a photo shoot in the morning, then a sit-down with a few press junkets, and... No. No? I take a deep breath, screwing my courage to the sticking place. Rebook the shoot. Tell them something came up. Don't be ridiculous. You've got contracts to uphold for this movie. There's money on the line. Dad, I don't want to be Carmendor for the money. Darian, this is a job. I clench my jaw. It's not about the money, or the contracts, or the photo shoots, or the headlines, or the notoriety, or my insured abs. Why the hell insure my abs anyway? It's like Taylor Swift insuring her legs. It's ridiculous. Every precaution, he says. It's just... But I cut him off. Headlines or no headlines, I took the gig because of Carmendor. Because of Starfield. Because we used to sit down and watch the reruns together. Remember? That was a long time ago, Darian. Maybe. But sometimes it still feels like yesterday, when he was still my dad. To me, it's about the characters. It's about the story. The fans. It's about... The words catch in my throat as I remember the conversations Elle and I had. About the Black Nebula. About the world. About the what-ifs. It's about the impossible universe, I finish. What are you talking about? For once, I manage to swallow my anger. I want to be part of my own story again. And I realize that I can't stay in this limbo anymore. Between not having a father and having one. Unlike Elle, who would do anything to get her father back. I still have one. I want a new manager, I say at last. I want my dad back. Are you firing me? Yeah, I am. I love you, Dad. But I am. His voice turns hard. Darian, listen to yourself. Your career. You can't just... I am, I reply. And then I hang up. Gail begins to collect her things from around the room. From the look on her face, she thinks she's fired too. I'll be out of here soon. Mark said I'm supposed to... Forget Mark, I tell her. You are officially promoted, effective immediately. Her eyebrows shoot up. I toss her my phone, and she fumbles to catch it. Gail's jaw goes slack. You mean... I mean, I'm probably going to need to go to L.A. and make some apologies at that photo shoot tomorrow, I say. You can still catch a flight if you... But I'm horrible at apologies. She could not turn any paler. In fact, I think she's actually turning green. What happened to Mark? Why can't... I grab her by the shoulders and turn her face to me. We lock eyes. Gee, you're my number one. Always have been. You're the only person I trust. Now, if you don't want to, I understand. But I want to ask you anyway. We're a team, and always will be. Will you be my manager? Her mouth works silently, and then she closes her eyes and breathes deep. Some of the color returns to her cheeks. Finally, she opens her eyes and nods curtly. You bet there. I grin, squeezing her shoulders. You're the best. Miss the best to you, she replies, returning my grin. But just as suddenly, she drops it. Oh, the flight. I have to catch that flight. Spinning out of my grip, she grabs her purse from the floor and darts for the door. She pauses and turns back to me.
I promise I won't let you down.
And then she's gone, the door slamming behind her. Lonnie finishes his drink and stands.
So, what's our plan?
You don't have to go, I tell him, shrugging out of Carmendor's jacket. I'm sort of going AWOL, so it's not in your contract.
Then as far as I'm concerned, I'm off the clock, he says, straightening his suit. I can do whatever I want with my time, and I want to help you out. So, what's the plan?
First, I say, to the vending machines. With all this good luck, they gotta have an Orange Crush. And holy gods of soda, Batman, by the glowing light of the great vending machines on the third floor, I spot a beautiful Orange Crush button. And when I push it, an orange bottle rolls out. I crack the seal and drink to the sweet, sweet taste of victory.
That's your plan? Lonnie says. To drink a soda?
I cap the bottle and shake my head. A half-crazy idea now fully formed in my head. I'm going to do what Carmendor should have done in the last episode of Starfield, I tell him. I'm going after the girl.
L. There have been only three instances in my life that I thought I'd never get through. The first was when Mom died. I was too young to remember much, except the memory of Dad hugging me on a cold September morning and the smell of sterilized hospital rooms. The second was that moment before Catherine came outside, while I sat on the porch waiting for Dad to come home. The air was humid and sticky, and I couldn't wait to show him the story I'd written about Carmendor and the Nox King. It was the best one yet. I was so happy. And then my stepmother came outside with the phone pressed to her shoulder and said, "Come inside, Danielle. Robin isn't coming home." I can't remember where I put that story. I stopped writing after that. I guess the blog came out of that hole. A little good in the impossible. And those two moments, I made it past eventually. But the third? I'm not sure I'm going to make it through this one. Because I lost my mother's shoe. I'm late for curfew. And as Sage turns onto my street, I see my house, my parents' house, with the ugly for sale by owner sign that Catherine put up. All the lights are on, and Catherine's Miata is in the driveway. On the porch, my stepmother stands with her arms crossed, hands cupping elbows, her face a stony, unreadable expression. And on the pumpkin's dashboard, the clock reads 2:05 a.m. I am Princess Samara, and this is my Black Nebula. Cal leans forward. She's pale and clearly nervous, wringing her hands. I don't want her to get in trouble at my expense. But I don't know what else to do. She seems adamant about going in with me, even though I told her she can sneak in through my window. There's no reason for both of us to get punished.
You don't have to go.
Sage slows down, but doesn't stop entirely. She's being a good friend. She's the best friend. I'm glad I got to know her.
Or I can go with you.
But she can't go with us. I thought I'd be panicking more, that it would be clawing up my throat, stinging my insides like jellyfish kisses. But I'm surprisingly calm. A few moments stranded in the eye of the hurricane, Cal squeezes my shoulder. I'll be right here, too. Cal, you don't have to. Stop trying to take all the blame, she interrupts. I'm not my sister, and I'm not my mom. I'm sick of being put in this box. I'm not a box person. It's time Chloe and Mom learned that. The pumpkin comes to a full stop.
God, she looks like a wet cat, Sage mutters.
That's her normal look, I tell her. Sage leans over and hugs me hard.
I'll see you tomorrow at work.
Yeah, I croak. I mean, maybe. I hug her back and open the truck door, but Cal lingers for a moment, unsure how to say goodbye to Sage. I quickly avert my eyes. It's not my business, and it feels private. As I step out onto the lawn, Catherine narrows her eyes at me. But then Cal follows me out of the truck, and Catherine's face morphs into anger, like a firework exploded. Just me is one thing, but me and Cal? Dread curls in my stomach like snakes. She can't do anything, I tell myself. Don't be scared of her. But I am. I'm scared of her like Carmondor is scared of the Nox King, like Amara is scared of the Black Nebula. Before I found my parents' costumes and met Sage and found some kind of happiness, I didn't think Catherine could possibly take anything away that hasn't already been taken. But standing here, wearing my parents' things, the taste of watermelon punch on my tongue, and David Bowie crooning Ziggy Stardust through the pumpkin's speakers, I realize she can take away a whole lot more than I realized. I have a life now. I have things that matter. I pull my dad's jacket over my shoulder. It smells more like Darien than me, like cinnamon and starch and sweat and a night I won't ever forget. Behind us, Sage forces the pumpkin into gear, and with a loud belch of black smoke, coasts down the road. Calliope, Catherine looks down at her daughter from underneath her lashes. I believe we need to talk. Chloe told me everything. I am very, very disappointed. Mom, I can explain, she says, but her mother cuts her off. Inside, please, before we make more of a scene. Cal ducks her head and hurries into the house. Catherine's lips curl in disgust as I quietly follow. She slams the door shut, and Cal whirls around. Mom, I can explain. It's not what it looks like. Oh, I know what it looks like. I just didn't think you would lie to me so blatantly, darling, Catherine replies, her voice eerily cool. Sneaking out of your tennis tournament? To go hang around with some druggie and your stepsister? Don't you want this varsity position? A future? Chloe seems to be the only one who does. It clicks then, in an instant. Chloe arrived home before us and told Catherine the exact lie that would throw Calliope under the bus with me. I can't believe it for a second. Because why would Chloe do that? They've been inseparable ever since I can remember. Cal seems just as shocked. But that's not... Chloe told me everything, Catherine finishes. Upstairs, now. But Mom, now, Catherine snaps. For a moment, I don't think Cal's going to go, but then she disappears, hurrying up the stairs. When the door to the twins' room slams, Catherine turns her gaze on me, sharp and hard. Where did you get those clothes? Her voice is like knives. I stop in the foyer to wipe my bare feet. Mom's shoe, the one shoe I have left, is in my hand, and Catherine looks at me with disgust. Glitter is fallen off around me, stuck in the folds of my dress, pasted to my skin as though I am part Stardust too. They're mine, I say. My parents. And you had the audacity to drag Calliope into your nonsense. It wasn't nonsense. It was a convention. We entered a contest. A contest? A cosplay contest. Remember ExcelsiCon? Dad's dream? I wanted to be a part of... I don't care what you want, you little brat. Catherine exhales so hard it sounds like a hiss. You knew Calliope was impressionable. You knew you could get her to go along with your schemes. This all started when you started working at that filthy food truck. It's not filthy. The girls at the country club told me I had you on too loose a leash to let you work there, but I trusted you. She draws herself up full height, her silk robe gleaming. You will never see that girl again, Danielle. Sage? My heart plummets. But it's not Sage's fault. I will nip this in the bud before you disgrace all of us, she continues, raising her voice to drown mine out. You will never, ever see her again. Do you hear me? The word hits me like a punch to the stomach. Never see Sage again? Ever? And you will quit that job, she adds, effective immediately. You'll work somewhere respectable where I can keep an eye on you. But it's my job, I try to argue, my voice cracking. Quit the magic pumpkin. It's one of the only things I ever fought to have. One of the only things I got by myself. One of the only things I could get by myself. I earned it. I like that job. I can't trust you, Danielle, my stepmother says. And if I can't trust you, you don't deserve what I give you. All I did was go to the convention my dad built. I blink back, the tears burning at the edge of my eyes. And it's my con, too. I went because he's my father. He's mine. I finally felt like he'd be proud of me. Why can't you? Catherine crosses her arms. I can't be proud of a daughter who lies to me. Daughter? You never let me do anything. You've punished me for I don't know what. For years. Tears burn my cheeks. Why do you hate me? Hate you? She blinks slowly, as if it's the most absurd thing she's ever heard. Danielle, I don't hate you. I clench my jaw. You sure haven't acted like it. All I ever wanted from you was one thing, just one. I wanted you to be proud of me, like you're proud of Cal and Chloe. I squeeze my eyes closed, trying to stop the tears. I hate crying, but I can't stop. I just wanted you to love me, too. I put my face into the crook of my elbow, stifling my sobs. The mascara and glitter and all the good things from the con rub off onto my skin, leaving wet streaks. When I finally manage to look up, Catherine's blue eyes are glittering in the foyer light. She doesn't respond for a long moment. Finally, she tilts her head, smiling like she's trying to be gentle. I've tried to love you, sweetie, but you make it so hard. My sobs catch in my throat. Your obsession isn't healthy, she says briskly. It wasn't healthy for your father either, living in a world of make-believe. That's all he ever did. That's all he ever was. It was only ever you and him and Starfield. And I hate how much you are like him. My arm drops away and I stare at her, trying to see the lie behind the cream makeup and dark mascara. But her lips are set in a thin line and her eyes are dark. And I don't think she's lying. There were just so many things I wanted to change about him, she says. And you. Change? To what? I ask, my mouth running before I can stop it. To the perfect daughter? To some cookie-cutter version of you? To someone you think is acceptable and worthy of your love? Why do I have to prove to you that I'm worthy? Danielle, I only want what's best for you. No! You want what's best for you, I snap, my voice rising. You never wanted me. Admit it. I'm a burden. After Dad died, that's all I was. And if you hate me for being like him, fine. But I'm the best parts of my father. He raised me to fight for what I believe in and to be a good person. And he raised me to see the best in other people. My voice is so loud it's cracking. But I let you trample over all the good things he gave me. But not today. Today at the con, for the first time, I felt like I belonged somewhere.
And that's more than I've ever felt here. In my own parents' house. The one you're selling.
Her eyes narrow. Starfield isn't real, Danielle. The sooner you learn that, the better off you'll be.
Of course it's not real. I know it's not real. It's just as fake as the styrofoam props they use in the cardboard sets, and the tinny laser sounds and the ice cream machines they try to disguise as data cores. I know it's all fake. But those characters, Carmendor, Princess Amara, Yussi, and even the Nox King, they were my friends when everyone in the real world passed around rumors behind my back, called me weird, shoved me into lockers, and baited me into thinking I was beautiful only to push me away just before we kissed. They never abandoned me. They were loyal, honorable, caring, and smart.
But I realized that trying to explain Starfield to Catherine is like trying to explain the sky to an anglerfish. Because she's none of those things, and never will be.
Now, you will go upstairs and take off that ridiculous outfit, she commands.
I turn to leave, defeated, but Catherine isn't finished.
And, she says, you will give me your phone.
I freeze.
Danielle!
I reach for the phone in my jacket pocket. For a brief crazy moment, I imagine that dream I had of me and Franco, setting off west, never looking back. I knew it was just a dream. Because this house can't move, and without it, I'm not sure who I would be. This was the last place I belonged. And I don't even belong here anymore. And soon it won't even be my home. I won't belong anywhere.
But if I have nowhere to go, what's the use in fighting?
Like ripping off a band-aid. I hand her my phone. Her manicured fingers curl around it.
Good. Now go to your room.
Tears come back before I can stop them, and I take the stairs two at a time. Catherine doesn't come after me. I'm not worth the energy, and there's really nothing left for her to take. In my room, I press my forehead against the door and squeeze my eyes tight. I can't take this anymore. I have to leave. Now. But I don't have my phone. I can't call Sage and tell her what happened. And Carmendor? In the end, even he knew I was no one worth talking to. When Darian called me Aunt Blenna, I almost thought it was him. That Darian Freeman was my Carmendor. But it couldn't be. The universe can't be that cruel. And Darian, like Carmendor, wouldn't talk to a nobody. I clutch my dad's jacket and sink to the carpet, crying into the costume harder than ever. Because now the glowing constellations above me just look like fake glow-in-the-dark stars. And the coat just smells like sweat. And the house, old and creaky, is just cold. And the living room will never be waltzed in again. That is why this universe is impossible. Because all the good things are impossible to keep. The universe always takes them away.
Darian. Turns out Charleston isn't the easiest place to go hunting for a food truck. I think this is it, I say, and tap the back of Lonnie's seat. He pulls onto the side of the road. I think he's relieved. We've already been to three other food trucks before someone, at a shrimp and grits truck, had an inkling about where we might find one that's orange and yellow. Oh, you're looking for the pumpkin, the older woman had said, rubbing her greasy hands on an apron that read G-R-I-T-S, Girls Raised in the South. I think that old girl's somewhere over by the market today. I think that old girl's somewhere over by the market today. That way. She pointed in the opposite direction, King Street, apparently, and gave us directions. Travel tip, If you're visiting Charleston, know where you're going ahead of time. There are so many one-way streets. Once you go down the wrong way, you'll never want to drive in this town again. After nearly grilling a baby stroller and double-tapping a marathon runner, we finally found an orange and yellow truck parked at the far side of the market toward one of the touristy piers. Lonnie flicks on the hazard lights.
"I can wait," he says.
"Or come with." "I think I got this."
"You sure?"
he rumbles, looking at me through the rearview mirror. "Unless you want to come," I say, "for moral support."
"I'm good, boss."
"Real pal you are. I'll call you when I need you." I get out of the car and watch Lonnie pull away before I make my way over to the magic pumpkin. It's horrendously orange. You can see it a mile away, which is probably the point. Its entire body is painted to look like a pumpkin, with yellows and reds and blacks, highlighting the drawn-on curves and ridges. A girl with bright teal hair leans against the counter, and my heart leaps when I recognize her, the same girl Elle drove away with. "We're all out of fritters today," she says as I get close, without looking up from her magazine. "I wasn't coming for the fritters."
"Well, I hope you aren't coming for the sweet potato fries either, because we're out of those, too."
"I'm not coming for food at all," I say. This girl kind of scares me.
"Huh." She still hasn't looked up.
"So what do you want?" "I'm understaffed and irritated."
I try to catch a peek into the back of the truck.
Where's Elle? She has to be in there somewhere, doesn't she? I don't remember her ever talking about a day off.
"Actually, I swallow hard. "I thought I could find Elle here."
That piques her interest. She finally looks up at me.
"Huh?"
I shift.
"Huh, what?"
She shows me her magazine. My promo shoots from after Hello America. I wince.
"You look way better photoshopped."
"That's a first," I say. "Hearing it aloud, I mean."
"Everybody probably thinks it."
She puts down the magazine and cocks her head.
"What are you doing here?"
"You wouldn't believe me even if I told you." She lifts an eyebrow.
"You're right."
I take a deep breath and pull out Elle's lost shoe. Her eyes widen.
"Okay, okay. I'm interested."
I explain everything, from the first text to someone I hoped was Robin Whittemore, to the weeks talking with Elle, to ExcelsiCon, to the ball, to the moment the truck pulled away. I want to find her and tell her the truth. I want to apologize. She leans farther over the counter, debating.
"Why? So you can clear your conscience? You just gonna run away again, Carmendor?"
It's irony. We both know. Carmendor never runs away from anything. He stays and he fights, and he deals with the consequences. And I think we all have the chance to be him. I think this is my chance now.
"No,"
I reply. "I won't run away from her again. Unless she's chasing me with something, and then I'll probably run. But never from her." Teal-haired girl debates for a second, chewing on a chunk of bright pink bubblegum.
"Well, Elle quit. Or her stepmother quit for her. And she's not answering her phone, and she isn't at home. I have no way of contacting her."
My heart begins to sink. "But," she holds up a finger,
"I think I know where she might be. If you're interested, I can take you there."
I hesitate.
"Now? But aren't you..." "It's a restaurant on wheels, Carmendor. It's supposed to move."
She closes the serving window, climbs through the middle to the cab, and pushes open the passenger door with her foot. I climb into the seat. The entire vehicle smells like pumpkin fritters and oil and 20-year-old leather seats. "I'm Sage, by the way," she says, as she cranks up the monster of a truck. "And I suggest you buckle up." The magic pumpkin roars to life with a belch and begins to rattle like it'll come apart at the seams. I quickly heed her warning and wrap the seatbelt around me. She forces the truck into gear and slams on the gas, swirling onto a one-way street with the speed of a NASCAR driver. My eyes dart to the rearview mirror. I see Lonnie has fired up the rental car and is hot on our tail. Sage tears through historic Charleston, the crowd simply peeling out of the way, and points us out of the city. "So, where are we going?" I ask, once I'm sure I'm not going to die. "This country club over in Isle of Palms, it's horrible." "Then why is she working there?" "Because she wasn't supposed to go to the convention," Sage says. The truck jostles across one of the many bridges in and out of town. Their white suspension cords intertwined overhead. "Her stepmother didn't want her to, but we took the truck. I got in major trouble for that, by the way. Grounded until the sun rises in the west." "Like hell I am," she adds under her breath before going on. "But we went anyway and entered that contest. We thought we could make it home, but..." It begins to make sense now. "That's why you left in such a hurry." "Bingo," Sage grins. "And now I'd bet the pumpkin that her stepmom's got her chained up at the club." Sage turns off the bridge, following the signs to Point Green Country Club. Everything suddenly grows greener, with lush grass and dense foliage. The roads improve, too. She follows the winding route up to a checkpoint and eases the truck to a stop in front of a yellow barrier arm. She leans out as the guard on duty opens his window. "Business?" the guard asks. "Just here to look around," she replies. "I think I might want to become a member." He twitches his mustache. "I'm sorry. I can't let you in without permission." "From who?" "People who belong to the country club," he says slowly, as though Sage is stupid or something, and gives her a look down from her teal hair to her piercings to her killer queen halter top. "And I don't think you're a member." Her hands tighten around the steering wheel. She scowls. "I'll show you what I'll do to your member if you..." "Excuse me," I interrupt, leaning forward in my seat. I flick up my aviators and put on my best smile, slipping into Darian Freeman in the blink of an eye. I never thought I'd actually be happy for the mask. The security guard narrows his eyes. "What?" "Hi, Darian. You might know me. Starfield?" His eyebrows dart up. "Ah, bingo. I've got a friend who works here, and I'm in town for just a little while. Do you think you could, you know, let us in to see her? Please?" He begins to nod. "Thank you, Starfield, thank you." But then his eyebrows collapse down again. "I don't care if you're the Prince of England," he says. "You can tell your friend to back her pretty truck up. You ain't getting in." "Well, that's rude," I mumble. Sage mutters something under her breath and slams the truck into reverse. The security guard sits back triumphantly and begins to close the window. My shoulders slump. "I guess I'll wait until she gets off work." "No." "Why not? It's only a few hours, right?" "Because the only way Elle can get home is with her stepmom. And if the security guard won't let us in, what do you think Catherine'll do?" She eases the truck to a stop and slowly slides it into gear. The engine belches black smoke. "What else can we do?" Sage narrows her eyes. "This day, We fight. She slams her foot on the gas pedal. The truck's tires squeal, burning rubber before they catch traction with a jerk. I grapple with my seatbelt.
You'd think by now I'd be good with stunts.
You'd think I wouldn't want to kiss my butt goodbye.
You'd be wrong.
Sage pulls the truck to the side, and we curve around the barrier, barely squeezing through. The security guard throws open the window, his face beet red, and shouts after us, but Sage just slams the play button on the stereo and cranks the music as loud as it'll go. The Starfield theme roars from the speakers like the trumpets of war.
L. The country club is already stifling. This morning, Catherine yanked me out of bed at 6 and made me clean out the attic for good. All of my Starfield DVDs, the statue of Carmendor, the replica communicator toy that Dad got me as a kid, and a few posters and postcards and collectibles, including one hella rare Pez dispenser. Then she drove me over here, chatted up the manager, and 5 hours later I'm stuck at the cafe on the veranda in a sweat-stained green shirt and khakis, bored out of my mind. I hated this job when I had it before, and I hate it now. But I've given up trying to fight. The cafe overlooks most of the greens at the country club. To the left is the pool. To the right is about a mile of shorn golfing hills. Most of the morning I've been serving middle-aged golfers with too much time and money on their hands. But they're not the only ones here today. Chloe and her friends are sitting at a corner table, gossiping so loudly I know it's on purpose. Jane sits right beside her. But unlike last year when it seemed she couldn't be close enough, while he was pretending to fall in love with me, today, she couldn't be less aware of him. She's too good for him now, or something. Cal's there, too, in her usual chair. But she's completely silent. She had come up to me when I was cleaning this morning, when Catherine wasn't looking and held something out. Chloe and I found this with the dress in the trunk upstairs. Did you write this? The paper was yellowed with age, but I would remember it even if 100 years had passed. Tears welled up in my eyes, even though I didn't think I could cry anymore, and I took it, nodding. It's a story. Fan fiction. I used to write them for Dad all the time. I blink back the tears and sniff. Where did you find this again? In the trunk. There are a billion of them. He must have saved them all. All of them? I look down again at the piece of paper. Thank you, Cal. She smiled shyly, as if she shouldn't. It's the least I can do. But now Cal is silent, and the sound of Chloe's voice is blasting across the veranda like a foghorn. He was such a dream, she gushes, and so nice. And way sexier in person. Gives you a run for your money, James, she adds, playfully patting his knee. I wish you all could have been there. Like, it was a blast.
How did you get tickets? James asks.
I bought them. I didn't know you liked that kind of stuff, says Aaron, the twins' second in command. You're always picking on your sister about it. The pictures went viral overnight. Two dancers at a cosplay ball, a movie star, and a regular girl in a dress made from the night sky. Darian Freeman, Prince Charming, the headlines read, and the girl they're calling Geekerella. I can't say it isn't catchy. You'd think everyone would be freaking out seeing me with Darian Freeman, but the girl in those pictures? She's wearing a mask. And Chloe, surprise, came down this morning with dyed red hair just like mine. Her YouTube channel gained 10,000 followers literally overnight. Her views have skyrocketed. She's gone from internet nothing to internet celebrity at warp speed. There's even an online petition to get Darian to come meet Chloe again so they can have their happily ever after, which I wouldn't be surprised if Chloe started herself. Honestly, I don't know what's funnier. Chloe pretending to be me? Or that Excelsicon me is famous? or as famous as internet celebrities go. The girl who danced with Darian Freeman. Chloe waves her hand.
Stepsister, and it's not my fault she's weird. Speaking of which, Elle, she calls out, glancing over her shoulder at me. Elle, another latte.
With a sigh, I dog-ear the page in my book. Whip or no? I ask, taking the milk out of the fridge under the counter.
What do you think? And it better be soy.
I fix up her drink and walk it over to her. She can't be bothered to come get it herself.
I had to escape out of there so fast, though.
Chloe takes the cup without even thanking me.
I didn't even have time to give him my name, and now all these other girls are pretending they're me. Look!
She holds out her phone, flicking through a bunch of hashtagged photos.
Posers!
I hear she lost a slipper, I say. Chloe's eyes narrow to slits, but I shrug it off because what have I got to lose now? I've totally given up.
Maybe the real girl has the slipper. You didn't say she lost a slipper,
another friend, blonde hair with purple tips, says.
Chloe, that's it. You should totally... I lost the other slipper,
Chloe grinds out. She sips her coffee, gags, and spits it out.
Ugh, I said non-fat, not soy.
She shoves the mug back at me. Liquid sloshes over the rim, all over my apron and green polo shirt. Hot. Scalding hot. I yelp, jumping backward. The latte splatters across the floor.
Oops, she sneers, whipping her head around to ignore me. As I said, I lost the slipper, so the point's moot.
I grab a handful of napkins from a dispenser on another table and begin mopping up the coffee. James takes a few napkins, too. Gets out of his chair and helps me. Chloe glances over.
James, you don't have to do that. That's why she's working.
I know, but...
James cocks his head.
Is that... thunder?
Of course it's not thunder. It's gorgeous outside.
Chloe rolls her eyes.
Honestly, let's just get going.
She takes a club from her golf bag and twirls it in her hands as she heads onto the green. Then she snaps her manicured fingers for us to follow, and we do. With a sigh, I hike her golf club onto my shoulder and set off down the grassy slope. Of all the days for Phil the caddy to be sick, it had to be today, or any day. And of course my boss doesn't care if I leave my post at the cafe, not if Catherine's daughter needs a caddy. Once we're out in the sunlight, Chloe drops the ball on the grass and squints into the distance. Then she pulls back and swings. The ball arcs high into the air and plops down 500 feet away in a sand trap.
Oops, she drones. Elle, fetch that for me, would you?
The thunder is getting louder, even though the sky is crystal clear. I wonder if Carmendor's looking at the same sky. And then, with a pang, I wonder why I care.
Elle!
Chloe screeches. I start after her, but the noise is so loud now, and I swear I've heard it before. Deep rumbling, like a dragon. Or... no. No way! Suddenly, one of the gardeners setting out the sprinklers for the evening yelps and throws himself to the side, over the bushes to the parking lot, emerging like the great pumpkin in flight, flies an orange and yellow truck. It hits the ground with enough force to carve a dent in the immaculate grass and tears across the greens toward us, the bright green fender smiling with a mouthful of leaves and twigs, and with the truck blaring from the open window so loud I can hear the speakers pop, is the Starfield theme.
Oh my God, what is that?
Chloe gasps. James blinks.
Food truck?
Cal beams.
I think it's called the Magic Pumpkin.
The truck skids to a stop in front of us. The windshield wipers flick on against the leaves, and Sage gives a whoop from the driver's seat.
That was so awesome!
I drop the golf bag and run up to Sage and throw my arms around her.
I'm so sorry, I croak, hugging her tight. Catherine took my phone, and I couldn't explain, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
She returns the hug, smelling like the place where I belong. pumpkin fritters, and day-old coconut oil.
I missed you, too. You wouldn't believe who I picked up today.
I told you not to pick up hitchhikers, I say,